Blog Talk Radio.
What happens when 32 teams meet the world at the bottom of the continent of a country called South Africa, where the ethnic outfits are only outstripped by thousands of very loud vuvuzelas? Well, you get the biggest soccer football party on the planet, and we're talking World Cup 101. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and I'm glad you have joined Focus on Empowerment today. Get out your pens, your papers. Definitely download this show if you are an American and were born in this country, because we're going to take you all the way down to South Africa, and then we're going to take you next door to the country of Swaziland, where education and gardening go hand in hand. You're in for a terrific show today. Hi, this is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and I am glad that you have joined today. I've done a lot of homework, and I'm going to be a student also, but I'm going to try to be a little bit ahead of the class and teach you about soccer. Now, I have three children that I raised, two who are living, and I was a soccer mom back in the 80s, so I know how the game is played. But because I'm an American and because we're so focused on our version of football and basketball, certainly if you're here in the Boston area, tonight is a big night for the Boston Celtics and the Lakers, the seventh game in the national championship, and baseball, obviously, and baseball is also very big in Latin America. But for the entire world, soccer is king. And for the next almost 3 weeks, we are already into week one, the world's eyes are going to be on South Africa. So I, for some reason, for this particular World Cup, I am hooked on this. I am just absolutely into it. I see such connections with multiculturalism and teamwork and team building and ethnic pride, and just a level of equality that you don't necessarily see elsewhere. So we're going to spend half of this program talking about World Cup, what it is, what this whole match is, and clearly if you have a level of expertise that I don't have, I want you to jump on the phone and call 646-727-2766. That's 646-727-2766. I'm going to spend probably the next 3 weeks on this because this is a 30-day experience with many games that are being played almost simultaneously. So we're going to take you through the existence and what's going on with World Cup right now. I'm not going to go over how these teams got to South Africa. We'll do that probably elsewhere, and we'll bring in a leading expert. We have an interview that I did with Robert Anderson. He was born in Ecuador. His mom is Ecuadorian. His dad is from the West Coast. He grew up in the United States, but he has a real appreciation for the sports. So we're going to bring him on a little bit later on and talk about the fans' expectations and the perspective of World Cup from his eyes, particularly since South America are just giants and really, really strong players in World Cup, particularly Brazil. So this is going to be a fun show. It really, for me, enlivens the work that I do, and I hope that you will enjoy it. And then the second segment of our show, we're going to take you to the neighboring, very small country of Swaziland. This whole region was Southern Africa in the 1800s, and then warfare and things that took place in Belgium. The whole continent of Africa was carved up to make what is now known as South Africa, what used to be Zaire is another name. We've got names like Rhodesia and Zimbabwe. So you have that whole southern part of Africa that it has a fascinating history in and of itself. But the game of World Cup, the actual World Cup match, is being played in South Africa. Probably one of the greatest known countries in the world because of their liberation from apartheid, certainly Nelson Mandela, who unfortunately suffered a tragedy 10 days ago when his granddaughter, great-granddaughter, was killed accidentally in a car accident. I know all about car accidents and losing children. I lost my 17-year-old son in 1997. So our sympathies go out to the Mandela family, the entire Mandela family, for what they are experiencing. Their great-granddaughter was in the car of a friend, and they were leaving the World Cup concert, and one thing led to another, and unfortunately she lost her life. So you have those kind of sad things mixed in with a whole lot of joy. But I'm excited about this. And I also want to encourage you to become a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. I'm really doing a full court press and just a real thrust to bring in 50 new members in the month of June. Membership is just a low $99, and it really gives you a whole host of resources, contacts. We are building an online community. I have a website that is relaunching with lots of great information. So we encourage you to go over to mssconnect.com. That's mssconnect.com, and find out more about membership and a couple of the freebies that you can get, including a networking video about 10 networking tips for professional and personal success. So I'm excited. Now, all this is just interrelated, and I just am glad that you are here listening to the program today. Okay, we're also going to play you two national anthems today also. First, the South African National Anthem, give you a little bit of history with that, and then the National Anthem for Swaziland during our second session. The Swaziland interview is a little lengthy, so we've split it up. We have two parts today. We'll probably play the remaining two parts next week and possibly the third week as well. This is a very innovative program that I think you should know about, and so we want you to learn more about that a little bit later on in the program. But back to World Cup. Again, I was a soccer mom. I probably played soccer when I was a kid. That was ancient history. But for the most part, soccer has been like a stepchild in the United States. I don't know why, but clearly it has been. It isn't so much now. We certainly know that the United States is competing. They tied with England last week with their match on Saturday, and I made a big mistake and said it was the UK that was playing, and my great friend Garth Dallas in Liverpool emailed me back and said, no, Carol, it's England, because when you talk about England and Scotland on the same team with soccer, they're arch rivals, and Scotland will always root for the other, or they'll always cheer for the other team, not England. So last week was a draw or a tie between the United States and England. This week there's another match that's going to be played where the United States will be playing another team tomorrow, I believe at 9:30 in the morning. And so it's just really exciting about these games. But let me just take you back. I'm going to actually read you this list, guys. I wanted you to get your pencil and pens and paper so that you can take notes and learn more about soccer, because we need to be a part of the world if, in fact, you're listening to this broadcast and you are in the United States. There are 32 teams, and I'm going to read them really quickly and let you know what the teams are. South Africa, there are actually six African countries. They include South Africa, Algeria, Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, otherwise known as Ivory Coast, Ghana, and Nigeria. And then there are the United States, Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Chile, Denmark, England, France, Germany, and Greece, that are also part of these 32 teams that made it to this last qualifying round for World Cup. They're all in South Africa right now. There's also Honduras, Italy, Japan, North Korea, South Korea, Mexico, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Paraguay, Portugal, Serbia, Slovakia, Slovenia, Spain, Switzerland, and Uruguay, which happens to be in South America. Those are the 32 qualifying teams. Those are, I would say, probably the best teams so far in the United States that are currently playing in the World Cup. Now, why is this such a big deal? It's a big deal because it is the biggest sporting event in the world. There isn't anything bigger than World Cup. And when you look back at the 2006 World Cup that was held in Germany, the last match alone had an estimated 715 million people who were watching that. Now, clearly, there are probably a couple of billion when you think overall between all the matches and all the games that are taking place. There's quite a lot of people who are watching the World Cup, bigger than the Olympics and very different, I think, from the Olympics, because with World Cup, you're talking about 200 countries on the globe. Looking at one game, looking at a team of men who are representing their country with one game. That's different than the Olympics, that's only 2 weeks. The World Cup happens to be 4 weeks, and the Olympics represent individual players. Some teams, with Winter Olympics, you've got hockey and Summer Olympics, you've got basketball, et cetera. But you have a combination of individual performers and sports, some versus several performers in one country who are competing for one particular sport. And also the team sport. So it's a combination of performers and teams operating, obviously, on the world stage, but only for 2 weeks. That's the Olympics. The World Cup represents the entire world that we know of. In this case, the best 32 teams with one sport and fans from around the world who are coming to see that particular team, their home team, whether it's Serbia or France or whether it happens to be Chile or South Africa, cheering for that particular team. Now, if you want more information about this, I would encourage you to go to www.fifa, that's F-I-F-A, F as in Frank, I-F as in Frank, A.com, because they have all the information, all the scores. You can print out a match schedule and see all the 32 teams and when they're playing, and obviously there are lots of videos there, and you can learn more about it. Now, all of these teams are right now in the group matches. There are 8 groups that have been geographically and as much as possible equally split up, so that you have 4 teams on each group. So it's group A through H. They are currently playing now, and they will continue to play until Thursday, June 29th. No, actually, let me back it up. They're going to play until Friday, June 25th. That's when all of these games, these first round of games, are going to conclude. And from that, each team will play 2 other teams in their groups. So they'll play a total of, so to give you an example, the United States has already played England. They're going to play 2 other teams between now and June 25th. And then based on the scores, they have a scientific FIFA calculation about who gets how many points, et cetera. So all of that gets factored in, and then the best 2 teams from each group then move up to the round of 16. And the round of 16 then begins do or die. So you either win or you don't win. And then they rest between June 30th and July 1st, and then they come back for the quarterfinals, and then there's another rest day or 2 days between July 4th and July 5th, and then the semifinals get kicked off on the 6th and the 7th, and there's another 2 rest days, July 8th and 9th, and then the finals begin and wrap up between the last 2 days of World Cup, Saturday, July 10th, and Sunday, July 11th, until you finally get to that one team that is the world-recognized best team of all times for the 2010 World Cup Series. That's it in a nutshell. Now, what I find very fascinating are the fact that you have these teams that really the scores are quite low, and it's a lot of skill in terms of the goalie keeping that ball out of the area where a goal can be scored, where the different positions of the team members and how they kick and how they can get past the goalie and how they can get past the defense and the offense. That's for another show. But, again, all of that adds up to, I think, a very exciting way to look at World Cup. Now, what I want to do first, since we're talking about the country of South Africa, where World Cup takes place, I want to play the South African national anthem. The thing that I really like the best, including the games, are the very beginning of the games, and I would encourage those of you in the United States, watch ESPN, because they typically broadcast between now and next week three games a day. They're during the day, and if you have cable, satellite, you can then replay it later on, but the replay doesn't show the national anthems. I happen to like that. I love the openings. I love the way it just starts off with a lot of spectacle and lots of excitement, and an opportunity for us to see the world and see a country at its finest. And so I love the fact that each player on the teams, this is during these group matches that are taking place, they come out on the field with a young South African, which I just love. They're holding the hand of one little child, and you ought to see these kids. They're just bright and energetic and excited and smiling. It's just an awful lot of fun. They come out on the field, there's the flag ceremony, and then they play the respective national anthems of the teams. Well, since we're talking about South Africa, I'm going to play the South African national anthem for you. It's only about 2 minutes long, and you may or may not have heard it, but I think it's a wonderful song, and it is really a combination of the ethnic indigenous African people, sub-Saharan African people, along with the Dutch roots. And so they've combined these two songs together to now make the African national, the South African national anthem, God Bless America. This is the English translation. Rise high her glory, hear our prayers, God bless her children. And then it goes on. I love it. Koko Sisi. Ikilele Africa. It's just a beautiful, beautiful song. So we're going to play that for you just to kick things off and give you a sense of what's taking place in South Africa. And obviously, all of the national anthems for all 32 teams are played before each match. This is the South African national anthem. I think it's one of the most beautiful national anthems that we have here on the globe, and it's just a lovely rendition. We actually are going to probably put all of the national anthems on our members-only section of the Multicultural Symposium Series so that you can learn more about them and also study up on their words and how they came into creation. So we'll do that in the coming weeks and months as well. I would also say that if you are in any kind of leadership role, I don't care if it's on your job or off your job, if you are a manager, a supervisor, a project leader, a team leader, whatever it happens to be, a sports leader, you should tune into at least one of these games so that you can have some kind of conversation with the people that you interact with, particularly if you have employees who are from another country, who were born outside, in this case, of the United States. I was actually at a hotel lobby earlier today getting ready for this broadcast. I'm broadcasting live at the Greater Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau offices in downtown Boston, sitting down in the Marriott lobby in front of the television screens, and it was amazing. Every person who probably was not born in the United States was glued to the TV set. All the Americans were buried in conversations and talking about other things. So my homework assignment to you is if you were born in the United States and if you have any kind of leadership role, watch at least one of these games completely so that you can have some kind of conversation with other people who you work with, you interact with, you connect with. Again, that to me is a way for you to become multicultural. Now, I'm going to play an interview. It's about 10 minutes long that we had with Robert Anderson. He was born outside of the United States. He works with states. He's an associate with State Street Bank here in Boston. Was born in Ecuador, but grew up in the United States. His mom is from Ecuador. Dad is from the California area. But he has lots of ties and roots in Ecuador. And again, because South America is such a powerhouse with World Cup and with soccer, he was a great person to interview. So enjoy the next interview with Robert Anderson. And we'll be back after we air this interview.
Well, I wanted to bring on someone who understands just the absolute passion of World Cup just from his own experience. And I'm very, very excited that senior associate from State Street Bank, Robert Anderson, is my guest today. Hello, Robert. Welcome to the show.
How are you today?
Now, I'm doing fine. You have a wonderful multicultural background. I certainly work and teach a lot about multiculturalism. Your dad is from the California area. Your mom is from Ecuador. You were born in Ecuador, and you were brought here as a baby. But going back to Ecuador, give us a sense of how important soccer is in the country of Ecuador, obviously in South America, just so that our listeners, particularly here in the United States, can really understand the importance of it, because we don't have that kind of passion here. So, Robert, take it away.
Well, I mean, soccer in in Ecuador and in lots of parts of Latin America is it's bigger than the Super Bowl. Anytime there's any kind of real major competition, in a lot of places, everything kind of stops. I mean, I still remember being in Ecuador in 1994 when the World Cup was here in the United States.
Right.
And, if I told you that, where my family lives, they live in Esmeraldas in northwestern Ecuador and in, Guayaquil, Quito, the other major cities, I mean, business stops.
Wow.
So people go home for lunch and they stay there, watch the games, and go back to the office. I mean, it's very different than, anything here.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you would talk about the 1994 World Cup, because I had the privilege of going to one of the games here at Foxborough Stadium here in the Boston area. I know Greece was playing, and I think it was the game Greece against Nigeria, I believe. But I just remember not at that point really having a global sense of awareness that I have today, but just remembering all the faces that were painted, the funny wigs that were on, and just gobs and gobs of flags, and very, very passionate not only players, but certainly the fans. I think the game of soccer is so interesting. Fans are very important, but it seems like with soccer, fans are vitally important in the game.
They definitely provide an advantage for the home team, especially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get so much electricity out of it. And my own experience, I have the opportunity to go to a lot of Boston Celtics games here. mm-hmm. you know, and I've been to, you know, professional soccer games in Ecuador.
Right.
I mean, you know, I was at game 5 on Sunday, and it was exciting. It was electric. It was probably the most electric it's been this year.
Right.
But, you know, I still remember as a child being at a regular season game in Ecuador and it being, you know, 10 times louder than I've ever heard it in the Garden. I
but
mean, everyone is into it, you know. And one of the big differences is most of the fans, you know, have all played or at least understand the game, so they really know what's going on out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Everyone's an analyst when it comes to soccer. You know, everyone kind of is, you know, in tune with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that's I think, a very important statement to make. You know, here in this country, we play what we know of as football, and kids are on Little League sports teams. They're on Pop Warner football teams. My son certainly played in that capacity when he was growing up. And, you know, we play soccer. My kids played soccer, so I was a soccer mom back in the 80s and part of the 90s. But it was a different kind of flavor. It was not the country, the United States still has not embraced soccer
right.
as has been embraced in other parts of the world.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, when I go back to Ecuador, you know, when you go to the beach, when you're walking down the street, you know, kids have soccer balls. You know, they're
uh-huh.
always kind of playing, you know.
Uh-huh.
When they're not at school, when they're not studying, you know, kids are outside playing soccer. That's
mm-hmm.
what they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different than here. You know, I think, and that's one of the reasons why I think in a lot of other parts of the world, people tend to be better at it. I mean, these kids, you know, from as young as they are able to kick a ball, they're out there, you know, playing soccer with their older siblings, with the kids mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. It makes a humongous difference.
Mm.
It's a part of the culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you have a lot of kids here who, you know, have never played a sport.
Right.
You know, in Ecuador, as an example, I don't think you'd find any child who's not played soccer at least once.
So it's almost a requirement.
Yeah, I mean,
get through childhood.
Well, in some ways, I mean, you know, you want to go outside and play with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some parts of the world, you know, all they have is a soccer ball sometimes.
Right.
And you know, in some ways, it's an escape for a lot of people. But you know, I think that as much as I say that, I think it's because they love it as well. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean.
Well, it becomes part of the culture, as you said.
Yeah,
it becomes
absolutely.
Part of the national tradition. I also, you know, I'm into this World Cup this time. I don't know why, but I'm just into it. I'm watching as many games.
You're coming around.
Yeah, I love national anthems, so I'm listening to the national anthems and just getting a lot of appreciation out of it. But I think what it is a team sport. So
right.
with the case of World Cup versus the Olympics, where you have individual performers, here you have a group of young men representing your country with a sport, in this case with Ecuadorians, the sport that you know. So it sort of lends itself to this passion that we certainly see on television coming from different parts of South Africa.
Right.
Now, you said that you have relatives who have played on professional teams in Ecuador. Tell us about that, Robert.
Well, it was when I was pretty young, but one of my cousins, Heiko Gomez, played professionally in Ecuador. And I think there are a couple others, but he's the one that I distinctly remember.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. And what do you think is the future when we look toward Brazil in 2014 and the time between now that the World Cup that's going on here in South Africa and then what will take place going forward? What do you, give us a sense of how we can become better, we can appreciate the game more and appreciate the tournament more?
I mean, I think it just comes from watching over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for the fans who, you know, just drop in from the World Cup, you know, you can certainly appreciate the beauty of the game that you have. But, you know, when you continuously watch it, you know, you kind of begin to see more than just the goal scored.
Right.
You know, the beauty of the pass, the beauty of the build-up to the scoring opportunity, you know, how, you know, in last night's game, I think, you know, Paraguay, the goalkeeper, you know, made a humongous mistake, which cost them a goal. You know, you can kind of see that happening before it happens when you get used to, you know, watching it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, the casual fan watches for the goals scored, and there aren't that many, so, in good soccer games, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, over time, you know, you get to see some of those aspects, and you kind of really see how beautiful the game really is. You know, when you have, you know, two great teams playing against each other, there may only be one goal.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to appreciate the other aspects of the game, I think, are really important.
And I can think about that, again, having a flashback back to 1994 when I was a different chapter of my life, and I can remember in the place where I was living downstairs, my landlord, the Haitian family, and boy, the noise that was coming out of their house was just thundering when every time things happened and worked well for Brazil, because I think Brazil won that year. It was just that was my first appreciation and first real introduction into World Cup, and now I've gotten to the point where I'm addicted to it now. Well, Robert Anderson, thank you so much for being a guest on my program. Any closing thoughts you can share in terms of tidbits that my listeners can use or learn from as they are walking through this World Cup experience that's going on in South Africa?
You know, I, more than anything else, I would use it as an opportunity to, like you said, I mean, soccer is a part of culture for a lot of these places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of, you know, be in tune with what's happening not only at the game but with the fans at the game. I know in this World Cup it's kind of challenging. The vuvuzelas are very loud.
Right.
You know, traditionally, you know, you hear a lot of the, you know, traditional chanting, the songs that are, you know, as much a part of the game as the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, listen to some of those things, pay attention to some of those things. If you have the opportunity, even if you don't understand it, listen to the game on the Spanish channel sometimes. Mm-hmm. The excitement that you get from the announcers there is really amazing. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, this would be Spanish television or Spanish radio?
Either. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you may not understand, you know, if you don't know the language, but, you know, they do such a good job of conveying what's going on. You can kind of feel the action, which I have always really appreciated.
Great. So. Well, you've been quite a help, and thank you for being an armchair observer and certainly a great spectator with your family background. Robert Anderson, thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Well, that gives you a sense of what one fan thinks about football or soccer, as we call it here in the United States. Thank you so much, Robert Anderson, for that interview. And we will talk to you more next week about this, because this obviously is going on until July 11th, but this is the beginning of World Cup 101. I'm excited when I think about grandmothers in South Africa who have teams, football/soccer teams, where they're really mirroring what they're seeing. They're staying in shape, physically fit. I think this one granny team goes from the 50s until the 80s, so they're women of all ages who are also playing soccer. So, again, this is a sport that is played by the very young and those who are up in age. Again, if you want more information, I would encourage you to go to, first of all, FIFA.com. That's the official organization of World Cup, FIFA.com, or go to the BBC website. They have extensive information, videos as well. You can see the granny teams at the BBC website. That is bbc.co.uk. And also ESPN, which is broadcasting the games live here in the United States. And if you have an ESPN channel, you can get those stations live. That's ESPN.com. And again, we'll tell you more about this and we'll talk more about it next week. But it's just, I think, very exciting. And certainly if you are in a leadership role, I would not ignore this. I would definitely watch at least one game fully so you can have a halfway decent intelligent conversation with some of your staff members. And we'll probably bring you more information next week about the vuvuzelas. That's that horn that's being played continuously game after game after game. And it's stirring a lot of controversy because people think it's annoying, but it's part of the South African culture. So that is World Cup 101. We're going to switch gears now and take you next door to a much smaller country, look on a map and see if you can find Swaziland. Swaziland is a very small country. They've had their issues politically, economically, socially. They have a lot of poverty there, unfortunately, and their AIDS rate is off the chart, unfortunately. But there is a nonprofit organization based here in Boston that has a program, a special program, focusing on teachers, and these teachers are working with students and interacting with students in a very amazing way, and they're showing these students how to grow gardens so that they can grow their own food, grow the right kind of food, the right mixture of food that will help them and stimulate brain activity and help them with school. So they're mixing gardening with healthy nutrition and diet along with school. Now, the thing about these students is that a whole lot of these students are orphans. They're orphans because at least one of their parents has died of AIDS, and either they are caring for themselves or they're being cared for by other relatives, and it is a staggering rate. And so that's why this program is so important. So without further ado, because we're running a little short on time, I'm going to play. This is part one of the interview. It's about maybe 7 minutes long, and then we'll come back if we have time. I want to play the Swaziland National Anthem. Otherwise, we'll save that for next week and then take you to part two. Again, this is the These are the teachers who came to Boston a few months ago that I had a chance to interview from Swaziland. Enjoy this.
I want to thank you for, first of all, coming to Boston, my city, and coming to the United States. I believe this is your first time in the United States and hopefully not your last time. And I just want to welcome you, and I'm fascinated with the work that you're doing and the work that you plan on doing and obviously the relationship that you have here with the organization. So why don't we just go down the line and just briefly introduce yourself and tell us what you do back in Swaziland. And we'll start, first of all, with welcome.
Yes. Yeah, I'm welcome. Matabelang Kaliti. I'm a teacher by profession. I teach at high school from Form 1 to Form 5, and I specialize on agriculture.
Great.
I hold a BSc in Agricultural Education and I'm presently pursuing my master's degree in Agri Education. So I'm a volunteer for the program. I'm a focal point at the school and I help the children a great deal.
Excellent, Roy. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Tulani.
Yeah, my name is Tulani Wiseman Twala. I am teaching from grade 5 to grade 7 in a primary school at Kalangahle. I'm teaching science, mathematics, and practical arts. I'm also a sports teacher, and above all, I'm a focal person for Bantwana in Swaziland. So working with children is not just a big issue to me, so it's just good.
I found that quite interesting. You've gone from science to art. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's quite broad in terms of your disciplines.
Yeah. So I hold a primary teacher's diploma.
Yeah.
So after 8 years, I'm thinking of going for a Bachelor of Science of Education.
Great.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mavis.
Yes. I'm Mavis Villane. I work for the Bantwana Schools Integrated Program in Swaziland, SIP. So I work there as a monitor and evaluation specialist. Basically, I'm responsible for ensuring that all programs that are being implemented at our school level are really going the right direction. And if indeed they do make an impact, even at the child level where we are most concerned.
Great, very good. Thank you. I would like just a 101 on Swaziland because I know that we have listeners and those who are going to view this interview and they're going to be very curious about, I know South Africa, I know Egypt, I know Ghana, I know maybe Kenya, but Swaziland I don't know much about. So give us a sense of geographically where is Swaziland and the population and the other information about it.
Okay, so Swaziland is in Sub-Saharan Africa. And it's close to South Africa. It's a very small country, but very beautiful in scenery. It's around 1.1 million total country population. And currently, probably what would interest the listener would be the OVC statistics, because we are mainly concerned about orphans and vulnerable children. which is the UNICEF, they estimated it to be around, by the 2010, to be around 110,000 overseas, which is around 13% of the total country population.
110,000?
110,000. Mm. And over the past 5 years, it's been progressively increasing from 70,000 overseas. And all these children, mainly, it's been mainly the contributing factor is the HIV pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Which is widespread. As you know, Swaziland is one of the countries with the high prevalence of HIV in the world. And for antenatal care, mothers who are pregnant, it's about 36%
mm-hmm.
of all those mothers who are pregnant HIV positive. And for the total country population, the adult population between aged up to 15 to 49, it's around 26. It's around 26%
mm-hmm.
So you can imagine the vulnerability of children and other impacts that are caused by the multifactorial HIV.
And the impact on the whole country
and
too.
The whole country, the mm-hmm. economic impact, because so many resources have to be redirected.
Mm-hmm. How does that relate to the work that you're doing as educators, both Welcome and Fulani, working with grade school students and on up? Is there an extra amount of work that you have to do as a professional, given the economic circumstances, the health circumstances of the country, as you're trying to guide and shape the lives of young people in Swaziland?
The program really addresses some key issues, because we as educators, we needed to be teaching healthy children, we need to be teaching children who have eaten, and we also needed to be teaching children who are emotionally understanding, who are emotionally okay. So this program actually addresses the key issues in the process, because it provides some help, it provides some psychosocial support, and also it provides an improved diet,
mm-hmm.
which some of them, it is the only meal that they usually have,
mm-hmm.
because back at home, they don't have anything. So this program really, really is very useful to the country as a whole.
Great.
Yeah.
And Tulani, can you explain the program to us and to my listeners?
Yeah,
and please feel free, Mavis, and welcome to jump in. Yes.
So this program, I like it. Yeah, because most of the NGOs in Swaziland, they are there, but they do not take much care at home. So we as teachers, we find it as a burden, as we are supposed to cater for the children, and then at the same time, there is a neighbor's child hungry, and then when you get into class, you're going to get down to business, and the children are feeling so sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
So we are supposed to cut off the deficit and look for food so that the child can be in a balanced nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I like it mm-hmm. very much.
Yes,
the underline, because the listener may ask, where are the NGOs or non-governmental organizations within Chile? They are there, but probably the distinguishing factor with this kind of organization is capacity building. That is to give the people empowerment in terms of their capacity to so that they can be in a position to try and initiate some progress themselves, because the donors will not always be there. Us as an organization will not always be there, but we want to empower them to be able to support each other. There are resources which can be found within the community, within the school, other than looking outside.
And if you missed what Mavis had said at the end, she was saying that the program ultimately is trying to empower the teachers, the parents who are left, the community leaders, those child providers, so that there is capacity support, so that ultimately when the dollars dry up and the nonprofit organizations go away, then they'll be able to sustain themselves. And that's one of the main reasons why this gardening effort has taken place. I apologize for, first of all, my voice. That day when I was interviewing, my voice was not in great shape. And secondly, some of our guests speak very softly, and so it may be a little more difficult to hear it. But again, we're going to actually post these interviews at MSSConnect.com at the website on the members only section. Will enhance some of the volume. But I think it's a very important concept to understand. And I want to just very quickly play the Swaziland national anthem. I'm doing this because so often we don't know these anthems. We don't know their meaning. Swaziland is one of the newer countries in Africa. But the English translation to their words include, O Lord our God, bestower of the blessings of the Swazi, we give thee thanks for all our good fortune. We offer thanks and praise for our king and for our fair land, its hills and rivers. This is an instrumental version of the Swaziland national anthem. It's about a minute long, and then we're going to get back to part two of our interview. A beautiful national anthem. That is the national anthem from Swaziland, which is right next to South Africa, obviously the southern part of the African continent. And we are playing an interview with teachers and supporters of a very special program, part of the Swaziland Batwana School Integrated Program. If you want more information about this, you can go to their website, and their web address is worldedorg. That's worlded.org. Now let me hurry up, and this is just a 4-minute clip with part two of the Swaziland teachers, and we'll play the rest next week. And again, just listen up. I know that some of the words may be a little difficult to understand, but it's a really important concept that they're doing.
Now, is this throughout Swaziland or in one particular village or one area?
It is in one area, most vulnerable area in South region in Swaziland, which is the Lubombo region. Because in the Lubombo region, it's one of those dry areas, drought-stricken. It's got a lot of vulnerability compared to the others. Not that there isn't vulnerability, but relatively, Lubombo region is the most vulnerable region. So we piloted 10 schools with assistance of the Ministry of Education, giving us those schools, and we've been working hand in hand with the Ministry of Health, trying to see how best we can strategize to come up with a program that would consolidate all the needs of a child, other than probably just giving food, because sometimes there's a saying that when the rope is just too short, it can't really tie around. It's like you've done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can give the food, and then after the food, the child is sick, the child is unhealthy, hygienic-wise, the child then gets sick again. So you have to provide a comprehensive services to the child so that the child will stay psychosocially balanced.
Mm-hmm. So that's the plans to expand the services
are in the making. In the making.
Uh-huh.
So for now, what the pilot has assisted us with is just to get a feel. And also to see, actually, we've been amazed. Even myself, I'm staying in Swaziland, and I've been close. I knew all the things were there, but when you get down at the level, when you see the situation, you start like you are seeing it for the first time again, looking at the comprehensiveness of needs that are supposed to be delivered. And NGOs, with my past experience working with them, we haven't been able to target really the special needs psychosocial support, like the health support, assuming that the Ministry of Health is providing health care, but it's not free. And with children who don't have parents, double orphans, and some are single orphans, and some of those parents are vulnerable themselves, are sick, HIV, positive or fully blown AIDS stage. So it's, those children don't have money to go to the hospital because everything you have to pay with at low levels, but they don't have anything. So I feel like this project, the health support, the psychosocial support, the food and nutrition support, it's really helpful because we don't even just give handouts. We teach them to come up with things.
It's an empowerment program. It sounds like it's very empowering, right? Are school fees free, or do the parents have school fees for the young people in Swaziland, or does it depend? Are there government-free schools?
Okay, the government has tried a great deal towards, I think, the main leap that they've really concentrated and invested on education, providing primary education, because they do some, we do have some grants from, obviously grants, which the government is supplying, but it becomes a problem when it talks, we have to talk up that, because some children don't have the top up fees. Government pays a certain amount of the grant, but not the full amount. So sometimes it doesn't help the child giving a bit of that, and then at the end of the year,
not
the child is chased away to go back home and find the top up fees, because there's nobody at home who's going to top up that fee. But government has really tried to put overseas in school. But when it comes to the other problems, which are also critical, and the other needs, we find that as NGOs we have to come in and try to balance the scale. They, yes, they do receive education, but on an NGO stomach, on are they sick, are they, so we have to try and bridge that gap.
I know a thing or two about school fees, having sent a young man to high school in Kenya for the last 4 years, so I know a lot about school fees, an awful lot of that.
So again, this is the conclusion of this particular interview. We're going to continue our interview next week, but the problem, multiple problems. Number one, you have a high incident of HIV in Swaziland that has literally wiped out families, and mothers and fathers have passed away, and their children are left to fend for themselves, or they're then sent to grandparents who obviously you know, maybe not have the means to take care of them. And so this program is trying to circumvent all of those things that can just go terribly wrong for the children who are left behind. We take our educational abilities here in the United States for granted. We certainly have healthcare discussions and debates, but when you sort of expand the healthcare complications in a country like Swaziland, where you've got to pay for everything, it can be quite daunting for the young kids who are left behind. So that is you know, quite a disturbing factor. But this program, the Botswana School Integration Program, is trying to really circumvent that. They started off with 2,500 children in 10 different schools. Now, keep in mind, with a lot of African schools, and this is the same way in Kenya where I have been, a lot of their elementary and their secondary schools are very large and have lots of kids, particularly the government schools. The private schools have smaller numbers, but it's nothing to have one teacher who is taking care of 100 kids. That's just pretty common. So you can do the math yourself, 2,500 kids in 10 schools. You can easily have very, very large schools. But this particular program is being piloted in 10 different schools, and they plan on expanding the program as it continues to do well. But they're doing great work, and again, trying to teach children about gardening, the importance of gardening, and using that as a teaching tool. So I want to thank my guests who were on that interview today. First, Mavis Villane, and hopefully she'll be listening at some point on the show. Thank you, Mavis. She is monitoring and evaluation specialist in Swaziland for this program. Our second individual was Thulani Wiseman Tawala, and he is a teacher and also volunteers for the program. And then there's also Welcome Masabella Maklafai, and he is also a teacher but volunteering. They were brought here, did some fundraising within World Ed. The John Snow Organization is their parent organization, so they did some fundraising, brought these teachers here so that they could get real experience, and I'm sure they went around to different classrooms in the United States, and now they're back in Swaziland implementing what they learned here in the United States some months ago. It's a great exchange program, and I want to share more about that interview next week when we talk more about World Cup, and hopefully this is going to be a great experience for you. So, just again, I just really feel it's so important, particularly for those who are in leadership roles, those who are helping people, those who are supervising, those who are managing, to understand the responsibilities that you have to just reach out to different communities. And it can be done so easily here in the United States because so many people come to the United States to study, to learn, to go to conferences. So you don't necessarily have to go far. If you are living in the Chicago area, they have countless conferences that are held either on university campuses or in some of your hotels or in convention centers. The same thing if you're in Dallas or certainly New York or Boston or in parts of the Midwest and out west. And even if you're in a small community, this is the important thing when you really want to reach out and learn more about other cultures in other parts of the world. Based on the conflicts that have taken place around the world, there are communities in different cities, different sections of the United States, where whole communities have been recreated because of warfare and economic instabilities, et cetera. You have a very large Somali population, those from Somalia, in Minnesota. They're particularly in the Hennepin County area in Minneapolis. So you can learn and study and go to some of their events there. Here in the Boston area, you have a very large Brazilian population. You have a large Hispanic population representing many countries. You have Africans who are living in Worcester, Massachusetts. Worcester is about an hour from Boston, and that tends to have a very large population of Africans from around the continent who live there, and also up in the Lowell, Massachusetts area. So frequently you will find immigrant populations who are not necessarily in large urban communities. They can be in very small communities, and sometimes they are brought in for work-related issues where you have job opportunities, and so communities will get together and they will sponsor a group of family members who will then invite their other family members. One thing leads to another, and then you have a very large immigrant population in a particular community. That has happened in the Berkshires, way west of Boston, 2 hours plus west of Boston, as far as you can go in western Massachusetts. They have a thriving immigrant population, and it's probably one of the largest immigrant populations in the state. So don't take smaller communities for granted. Smaller communities can be real great incubators for immigrant groups, and you can learn an awful lot. Now, in weeks to come, we're going to probably walk you through a series of questions that you can ask and how you can build relationships with people who are different than you are in immigrant populations. The whole purpose is so that you can obviously empower yourself, that you can then pass on the knowledge that you have to other people, but that hopefully we can get a real discussion and dialogue group going amongst each other and sort of break down some of these cultural barriers that just stand in our way. One great way to do it is to watch those World Cup games. Between now and next week when I'm back on the air, I'm sure that some teams will be close to elimination because they will have not gotten enough scores to get them into the next round that's going to take place. So we're going to talk more about that. But it's just exciting about what you can learn if you're here in the United States, the people you can interact with, and then obviously taking that knowledge and sharing it with other people, and that's how the message can go on, and particularly sharing all this great information with young people who need our guidance. They need our expertise. They need to learn about our pain and suffering and the mistakes that we've made, not just so that we want to be, you know, gluttons for punishment for that, but so that they can be teachable moments and teaching tools for young people. We need to model the behavior that we want to see in them. And when it comes to international issues and global issues, it can be done very easily and with a lot of excitement when you're talking about wonderful sports games like World Cup and the like. So we're going to come back next week and talk more about this. And, again, I hope you'll share this and pass this on with others. Go to my website. You'll find out more about what things that we're doing at mssconnect.com. Send me an email if you have other suggestions at tellcarole, that's T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E, at mac.com, or give me a call at 508-947-5755. Empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with more exciting news on Focus on Empowerment. See you soon. Take care.